Hey, it's John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and it's The Entrepreneurial You, the show for dedicated and passionate Caribbean entrepreneurs seeking daily inspiration, brought to you by author, speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur, Henneka Watkus Porter. You must be prepared to ignite.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Entrepreneurial You podcast, where you know we help you to unleash your entrepreneurial spirit. I'm your host, Henneka Watkus Porter. A very warm, sunshiny welcome to all my first-time listeners. If you are new here, big up yourself. And an extra special welcome to our dedicated listeners. You know that you rock, right? You are the heartbeat of this community. Now, today we have the privilege again of sitting down with a trailblazing leader in the fields of data science and artificial intelligence. But of course, you know, we have to tease you. Before we proceed, let's take a moment to hear from our valued partners at the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
We needed to raise capital, but our experience with local financial institutions was that they were cautious and slow to act, and interest rates were far too high. We had real concerns about financing our business through outside equity investors and the possibility of interference. Could we get a fair valuation for our business? We had our own ideas about the business and its value. Should I go the traditional route of bank financing, or should I try the Jamaica Stock Exchange? So we made a call and experienced transformation of our business through conversations. I'm John Mahfood, CEO of Jamaican Teas, and we're listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
Give us a call today at 876-967-3271 to begin your transformation through conversation. We want to see your company listed on the Jamaica Stock Exchange.
Welcome back. My guest today has co-founded multiple companies in sectors ranging from fintech to tourism to sports science. He also held executive leadership roles in multinational corporations. Beyond his business success, Adrian is passionate about giving back. As president of the Jamaica Technology and Digital Alliance and director on many committees for national security, AI in education and job creation, his goal is to improve the quality of life of all Caribbean nationals. Over a decade in executive leadership, billions generated for companies using STEAM. Next stop, a Caribbean Space Agency. Let's make welcome, drum roll, ta-da! Welcome back, actually, Adrian Dunkley. Welcome back to the Entrepreneurial You podcast, Adrian.
Thanks, Angad. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, man, and I know a lot has happened since we last spoke, but before we dive into your remarkable journey, let's start with something more personal, I guess. So we've heard that you're a fan of metaphorical journeys. If you would compare your career in AI to any classical tale or fable, what would it be and why? That's a tough icebreaker, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. That's quite rough. Is this any culture? Doesn't matter. No limitation.
No limitation. I ain't putting a limit on you. No.
I feel like I'm gonna need some time. I've never actually thought about that, but I'd say any fable or tale where the protagonist starts off with a love of something but doesn't know what the value is until it's the right time, and then dedicates the rest of his life to improving that God-given talent to better people around him, better society, whichever tale that is.
All right, I can work with that. That's a good place to start. You didn't do too badly at all. I mean, there's no limit. So you're quite okay in going the direction that you wanted to go. Your journey from a double major in mathematics and physics to founding Jamaica first AI company, Starple AI, is undoubtedly interesting, inspiring. Just walk us through that, you know, the pivotal moments that led you to the world of data science and AI. Let's talk about it again. I know you touched a little bit on it when you came on first, but let's refresh the memories of those who are, you know, listening again, and for those who are new, introduce them.
Okay, it starts with a lot of failures, and it continues with a lot of failures. I'll say that. So the reason I chose that degree is because of my love of science. And fortunately, I didn't had parents that were understanding of my needs and my passions. They didn't necessarily understand why I was doing this, but they were accepting and understanding and accepted that this is something I wanted to do. So from a young age, father's like, oh, let me get you a bike. I'm like, no, give me a chemistry set. I want a chemistry set. Or, oh, you know, I want to get cable. Oh, why you want to get cable? I want sports. Oh, I want to hear about this channel called Discovery Channel and Science Channel and stuff. I want to watch documentaries, right? Look, they're probably like, boy, this kid lame. I remember one time my mother said to me, you know, just go get in some trouble. And that was preceded by me learning how to create gunpowder and a very large explosion around the back of the house, right? So my upbringing, parents didn't necessarily know how to manage me, but they were very accepting of the passions that I had at that point. And then now when it came to university, I said, you know, I'm going to do maths and physics and some other stuff. So, oh, you want to be a scientist? I said, yeah, I want to be a scientist. So all they really said to me is, can you make money out of it? I said, boy, I don't know, but I can try. I said, do your best, do better than your best, and don't regret it. And that was it. So when I went to university, I took the opportunity because I have a lot of teachers in my family, including my grandmother who taught for many decades. And she didn't teach science, but she taught English. So she was a very good communicator. She knew very well how to interpret things and to understand persons. And the way she dealt with me was, oh, I'm going to teach you about English. I never liked Hardy Boys or any of those types of books. So she would get me books about like African fables and science books to teach me English and to teach me about writing, things that I appreciated and I was interested in. And God bless her for doing that, because I think that's the main reason why I had such an easier time in science, because interpreting what people say is a huge part of science. Science is a discipline where you have to communicate very effectively to people beyond just doing some equations, some letters and numbers. So I went to university and basically jumped out different departments. So I went over SOSCI. I was already in science, but I went to computer science, maths, physics, humanities, followed my friends to the courses, biology and poetry and history, just because I was trying to understand as much as possible to figure out exactly how am I going to pave my own path. I have a general top level idea. I wanted the science, but what does that mean? There are so many problems in the world that how do you know what to focus on? So through that, I built a lot of good connections, friends that I still have to this day. And I said, boy, I'm not really finding exactly what I need, but let me try and do physics. Let me try and do quantum mechanics and climate. Let's see if that'll work for me. So I started a research degree there. Did it for a couple of years. Dropped out because I had to make some money. Researchers don't really get paid that well. That's something that government need to work on. And I said, all right, dropping out, but I need to find a real job. I said, all right, I'm in Jamaica, so it's finance or entertainment, right? So I said, let me go finance. Enter the working world, starting from scratch. I had to go around asking people, oh, like, you have to wear socks? Like, you have to wear a three-piece suit? How does this work? What time you wake up? When do you leave work? So some very basic questions that people, when I asked people, look at me, I said, you sound insane. But to me, it was working in academia for several years, right out of school, I wasn't used to that environment. And that was a very big benefit for me because I didn't make any assumptions. I was taught never to make an assumption until you have to. So I asked so many questions to these people, and quite a few of them, they couldn't answer because they didn't know why they were doing things. It was just rote. You do it just because you do it. And what that allowed me to do is when I entered the working world is you could say went against the grain. I started just finding executives and just talking to them. So this is me working in an organization for maybe a week and just saying, hey, let me check in and report. And then figuring out who the executives are. I'm just going to them office and just say, can I talk to you? And yeah, some of them were like, no, but you had quite a few that would say, all right, come in, let's talk. But they were very surprised. They're saying, this kid is just coming and talking to me. I'm like, look, I don't know anything about the business. I want to learn as much as possible. Can we go to lunch? Can I buy you lunch? Right. And that allowed me to really understand the industries I was working in and progress very quickly. And I guess be successful in my areas. And because of me jumping around, I understood a lot of different areas of the business lines. So it was easy for me to communicate across those business lines and bring people together. And all of that is really data. So in research, data analytics, data science, AI are fundamental components to it, but they're more a stepping stone to get where you need to get any research. In business, your value is based on how much money you bring in or how much money you save, right? For the most part. So what I did is I combined both. So a very quantitative, research-based, evidence-based approach, but not focused on writing a paper or doing a presentation, but focused on the bottom line, generating value that is very visible to the organization. And yeah, did that for over a decade, but I still had that itch I had to scratch. I still wanted to be a scientist in name, not just in function. So I basically found startups and found people who were like-minded and wanted to build something brand new. So this is from 2012, 2013. And got with some people, started some companies. They failed. Some of them didn't exactly fail. Some of them pivoted in other areas. But I got a lot of experience in terms of building things from scratch to then connect to what I was learning in the corporate world. So again, it was multidisciplinary. So the innovation and creativity of being an entrepreneur, but then the focus on regulatory requirements and structure and measurements and focus on value of a private sector entity, combining those two things together. And I still talk to a lot of those same persons. We get together, almost tear up with the level of failures that we had and all the time we put in. It's like war stories at this point, but very fond of those failures because I learned way more. I think a lot of times people focus on the success stories. So you have Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Zuckerberg, all these people, but you learn more from failures because there are way more failures to learn from. And there's less luck or opportunity. So you're basically knocking off all of the ways things can go wrong and maximizing the way things can go right. So every failure, okay, take 2 days off and just start again. So that's what I've been doing for several years now. Now, it got to a point where I said, all right, I've been doing AI and data science for 15 years for other people. And it was always constricted to what they needed. And you still have to compromise. I said, you know, there's a better way. I know there's a better way. So several years ago, I said, you know what? I had this idea when I was younger, because I used to watch all of these shows where you have the team of different professionals solving problems with crime and stuff. So I said, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to launch an AI company. said, all right, let me launch an AI and a data science company. Because at the time, people still weren't really interested in AI. It was just very futuristic, you know? Not like over the last year and 2 months where people are very accepting of it. So if I would go to a conference or want to talk, people would not really be that interested in talking to me, right? Because, oh, it's AI, whatever. So launched it. And I said, okay, let me focus on the relationships and building trust and focus on the value. So you're getting AI, but I'm focusing on the value of the AI, not selling you AI specifically, which is something a lot of companies need to understand right now, because I see a lot of them right now just wanting to use AI because it is a hype and it'll bring up your share price and all these things. But had some clients say, all right, I'm using AI for this. Here's the value. Okay. And I said, let me train in AI. Let me do these things. And people were like, okay. But when they saw the value, you know, I was like, wow, okay. AI can actually do things. It's not just science fiction. It's not just Terminator movie. So it became about advocating for artificial intelligence. And around the same time, I became the head of a Caribbean chapter of a global company called Humans for AI. It's a nonprofit association, members in Amazon, Google, NVIDIA, any big company who have members in there. And my focus was on the Caribbean. It was pretty difficult. You do meetings, but people aren't necessarily focused or interested in applying it because it was still something people really didn't connect with. Because AI is all around us. It's been here for decades, but it's working in the background, helping you or influencing you. So now with the implementation of ChatGPT and ease of use, people could now interact with these tools and really understand the value from them. So OpenAI did a really, really good job in terms of marketing their tool by just giving it to people for free and saying, use it and you will see the value. And people saw the value. It was amazing. So launching Jamaica's first AI company to me was obvious from years ago, to the point where I was like, why is no one else doing this? This makes so much sense. And we have a couple years head start because we've been implementing these tools in Caribbean environments. And we have that expertise to help with other companies. So that's a real benefit for us. So we have first move advantage, which is really good. But we're always trying to collaborate with people, find as many problems as possible, and trying to help out as many people as possible with a lot of our nonprofit initiatives. So I'm really passionate about that because I'm trying to find those kids who went through what I went through and they weren't really sure what they wanted to do with their lives, and saying, you know, you can do science and actually make a good living doing science. Yeah.
Wow. That's such a mouthful, Adrian. You never shared that in depth with us when you came the first time. So I'm glad you're here now sharing again. Yeah. You've said a lot. You've said a lot of interesting things. A lot of things that obviously show that you are somebody who goes against the grain. Love that you don't make assumptions. You've said a lot. But you know what stuck in my mind beyond everything else you said? You learning how to make gunpowder.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that has to be somebody who has a very curious mind. You didn't necessarily have parents who would support it because they don't get it. Not, I mean, God bless our parents, you know. They mean us well, and sometimes we go down a path, they see us going on a path and they don't get it, and they have some anxiety. So how did you really, really develop this mind that, you know, you've just been different? How did you develop this mind outside of the parental support? Just spend a little more time on that.
Sure. So it was, we didn't have a computer growing up, but my mother, you know, you remember the book ship? I think it was there.
Of course.
Yeah, so.
Some of my books are supposed to be on it. So, you know, yeah, I have a lot of books. Really? Yeah, man.
So they said, oh, let's go to the bookship, because I used to love reading books. And she found like science books and stuff. And Funny thing, how I learned to make gunpowder is actually through one of those books. They didn't give you the recipe specifically, but it was basically a story about China and some stuff. And they basically gave you ratios of things. And then I found some chemistry books in the library. I just went there and found some books. And can you imagine this little kid that's like 12 or 13 trying to figure out what these chemistry symbols mean and how to mix stuff together just to try it out. And I would say that spark, or when I actually tried to light the gunpowder and it worked, lit that spark into me, because it was like, I just researched these things and just figured this out and created or recreated something that basically contributed to our modern age, right? So they gave me the ability and the freedom to experience and experiment. I think that was really important. So I just tried things out naturally. And like I said, most of them failed. If I did 100 experiments, maybe 3 of them would kind of work. So I tried hot air balloons, robots, solar panels, building, heat engine, all these things. Most of them would fail or cause me some form of bodily injury. And my parents just make sure I'm okay. And they say, all right, go on, do what you got to do. So failure was always viewed as a temporary state. And you only fail when you stop. That's a really, really good lesson that they taught me. And then they never made things easy for me. So if I wanted to do something, I'd have to figure it out. I remember I got into archery at one point, watching some cartoons. And like, we're not buying a bow and arrow. So I said, all right. They said, all right, we'll get you some stuff to make it. So they took me to the hardware store, and I had to figure out how to make a bow and arrow. And I used PVC pipe and ropes and like little pieces of wood and tape and stuff to make a bow and arrow. And it worked. Worked pretty well. So it's always been about making things and then having things in front of you, but not just making it so easy that you can just reach out and grab it very easy. Because you take for granted the learning experience. Because it really isn't a destination. It's about the journey. So all of these difficulties that were presented to me were an opportunity to develop and grow myself. So I was really fortunate that they didn't make it easy on me.
Yeah, indeed. Sounds really good. Let me ask you, you were one of the speakers at the recent Grow Your Wealth conference. I missed your presentation, unfortunately, because I had to step out, but I'm going to watch the replay. What were some of the things that you highlighted during your presentation?
Oh, I have the worst memory now. I think there's a couple of things. I think the main thing was, check if you really need money from other people before you ask for it. Mm-hmm. Because you may have to give away way too much in the beginning. And that's a lesson I've learned myself as well with early startups. Second one was you can pretty much build anything for free, right? It's going to take some time, or you may need to find other people who have the expertise. But if you need to build something to present to an investor, it's very likely you can do it for free. Money is just a way to shorten the time it takes, but money is not the fuel to develop what you need. Because most investors are investing in you. They don't necessarily need a fully built product or like a fully thought out thing. They just want to know that you know the steps to get to your objectives. You have the capabilities. You just need some more money to make you get there faster, right? And more efficiently. We went through like different ways of getting funding, different approaches. There's only one, two I haven't done. So I've never done friends and family before. And I've never done crowdfunding before. And it's not that I have anything against them. I just never really have been in a position where it really made sense to do those things. But debt, grants, there's so many different ways to get money. So many people in the world willing to give you money on just a promise, right? You'd be surprised. You see politicians all the time. Politicians go up there and just talk. And imagine the level of influence and control they have just going up there and talking. And they're not necessarily offering you something tangible. So as an entrepreneur, I think it's important to realize that they're investing in you and what you're offering. So it's really important that you can communicate what you're offering to them in a very short period of time and very simply. Nobody wants to be treated like a dum-dum, right? There's a main thing I touched on, and I think, so there was some mention of, which I thought was kind of funny to present it, that I had a mentor who said to me that the worst thing you can do is give an entrepreneur money, right? And the entire purpose of my talk is to, as an entrepreneur, here are the steps to get money, right? But what he really meant by that was, a lot of times when entrepreneurs get money, they lose drive, they don't know how to spend it properly, and it takes away from that. I've been in situations where that, where we've become fully funded and the co-founders just lose interest and just fall off because they're so comfortable, start paying themselves millions and millions of dollars just because they feel like they deserve it and stuff like that. So this isn't me against it, but I think it's very important to go back to, do you actually need the money?
Yeah. You know, that's pretty critical because it's interesting. I tell people all the time, entrepreneurs don't really need money. I mean, in my early days, I had access. I was able to get loans and stuff easily, get grant funding easily. But in retrospect, it was not the best thing because I don't think money was what I need. I needed more mentorship in other areas that would help me to manage the money. Because, I mean, this is a whole other topic. I'm not even going to veer off it into that direction. But when we have some money mindsets that we've not addressed and we come into money, believe me, as startup entrepreneurs, it's not the best thing. So you're right. I tend to agree with you. I have one final question before I ask you to just give your final thoughts and share your contact details. And that is, obviously, we know that the world of AI is ever evolving, is ever changing, ever evolving even. And so as a trailblazer, how do you stay ahead of the curve and navigate this dynamic challenge in the field, or challenges rather in the field?
That's a great question. So for me, I don't hunt the trends. But what I do is I make entertainment out of it. So it's been 15 years in this field, and yeah, there are people who've been in fields for like 30, 40, 50 years, but we're in a digital age or distractions. So for me to spend 15 years in an industry, and this is me studying still the industry, so the academics component of it, the business component of it, you have to entertain yourself. So I am as much a user of AI as a builder of AI, right? So I love the apps and different approaches and that type of stuff. And I just use those to keep me passionate about it. But I understand that a lot of these things are just useless or a waste. But it's interesting. It's fun. So that's been my approach. So I'll try out cool, interesting stuff randomly. I'll ask people a lot of questions about what they do. I literally search for problems and try and implement solutions using AI if it's possible. And I like to prove myself wrong, right? So right now, everybody's talking about chatbots, right? That's not where the real money is right now for the rest of us, right? What's going to eventually happen is you're going to have 5 chatbots maybe that are like globally recognized. And my prediction is chatbots are going to become Pokemon effectively. Every kid has their own chatbot. Pikachu, Charizard, whatever, and they go through their life with their chatbot. It grows with them. It helps them. Oh, they need advice on school, they need advice on a date. They're in a dangerous situation and they need to figure out how to get out of it. You're going to have your chatbot right there helping you out, like a Pokemon, right? And each of them has their specific skills. And then when you get old enough, that chatbot with all your years of experience, you're going to now give it to your daughter or your son for them to now develop themselves, right? So chatbots or large language models are going to be integrated into the world. But in terms of innovation, they're just one small component of AI. There's so much more involved in it. So I focus more on the practicality and the value in the next 50 years, right? And even, I don't like to say futurist as a term or call myself back, but there are things I said to myself 4 years ago, this is gonna take 15 years that have happened in 3 years. There are things now that I'm forecasting that I have to keep updating my timelines. So yeah, man, 3 years. Oh no, 4 months, not 3 years, right? Because there's a global community of AI experts and engineers like myself who are just doing this for fun. And we're not getting paid. We're just going out there and trying to help because we see a problem. And then we're giving it out for free. And then the bigger tech firms are absorbing it, refining it, and helping it. So to stay ahead of AI is actually more about just staying ahead of the problems that you're seeing in front of you versus just focusing specifically on AI. So don't worry about the trends. Just learn the basics, the fundamentals, and you'll be more than good. Because most people don't really understand AI in the first place. They can use the tools, but it doesn't go much further than you tapping into a tool and putting in some prompts. Large language models are one piece. There are bigger things happening and coming very, very soon.
All right. As we say in Jamaica, enough said. All right. So let's hear from you, Adrian, in terms of how can we connect with you? Where can we find you? And what's, in 30 seconds or so, the last piece of advice you want to give us on this topic, or, motivation, inspiration, whatever you want your last words to be.
Sure. So we have a lot of initiatives. I have a sports lab called Sports Brain. It's the first sports AI lab in the Caribbean. We're always looking for volunteers. We're looking for people to hire. If you're interested in any sport, we're focusing more on football and track now, but we're also getting into lacrosse because that's a small segment. So reach out to us for that, Sports Brain. So you can check our website, www.startup.ai. If you have a child or a nephew or a niece, or you're interested in AI, we have a free training program we've been running for the last 3 years almost. We've trained 300 plus Caribbeans for free to use AI and data science in their working world for free. We don't charge anything. You just have to show up to the workshops and do the assignments, right? Their prizes and stuff as well, but you tackle crime, you tackle tourism, you tackle climate, sports, politics, the full gambit, and you get to choose what you work on as your capstone project. And that is called Sprout. So you can check again, www.startup.ai or www.startupinterns.com to register. We'll reach out. We have a new cohort starting in about a month, so you have some time. We have some stuff working in different areas as well. We are looking for employees. We're looking for personnel. So what I like to do in this case is, if you have an idea for a position and you pitch us and it's a good pitch, you will get the job. So you get to decide the job you want to do for us. And reach out to careers@startup.ai. Send an email. Just put in the title, I want this job, and whatever the job name is, and our HR will review it. Lasting words, I'll go with one that I use quite a bit. I think it works very, very well for AI. For anyone who is thinking of creating an app or a new AI tool, when the customer comes first, the customer will last. And I'm blanking on the person who said it. It was Robert Half, maybe. But yeah, prioritize people first before AI. Always think about the people and how it'll affect them. And you won't go wrong.
Awesome. Final and interesting last words there from Adrian Dunkley. And there you have it. I want to say thank you so much, Adrian Dunkley, for coming back to the Entrepreneurial You.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, man, it has been a truly inspirational journey into just talking about AI, talking about, your magnificent past experience, your journey. It has truly been inspiring. A true leader and you're shaping the future of the Caribbean. So thank you for what you do. Yeah, absolutely. Until next time, my people formers, stay curious and keep mastering the future. I'm Henny Kowatkis-Porter signing off. And of course, I want you to stay inspired, keep refining your skills, and definitely tune in for more episodes as we keep nurturing your entrepreneurial spirit. Remember, I always say here that your journey to success is uniquely yours. So you are inspired by the guests I bring here. You're inspired by their journey. But remember, each person's journey is going to be different. And so it requires your own input, your own drive, your own motivation. For more information, please visit our website at hennykowatkisporter.com. You'll find the show notes and links related to today's episode. And I also encourage you to follow me on social media if you're not already doing so. Keep up to find out more about the podcast as well as all the other things that I'm doing. And finally, I ask you to affirm with me, the pursuit of knowledge and the relentless pursuit of my passions can unlock boundless opportunities. I will keep dreaming and innovating. What good?